This is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum. Today we have Cleaner Rob with Christian and Barton in Virginia, and we have Dwight Konyak with Future Energy Development out of New York, both of which are going to be talking about issues related to combined heat and power and other policy issues. So, Cleaner, why don't you go ahead and start out?
Sure. I was going to say that the big development in Virginia has been the passage of Senate Bill 966 in the 2018 General Assembly session. It's called the Grid Modernization and Security Act of 2018, and it basically incents utilities to invest in modernizing the grid. So it adds a new definition to the operative statute in Virginia. That's 56576, and that new definition is electric distribution grid transformation project. That includes equipment that is designed to accommodate or facilitate the integration of customer-owned renewable electric generation resources and to enhance the utilities, distribution grid, and reliability and energy efficiency and conservation. So, and then later on in the definition, it includes encouraging microgrids. So that, I think, is the, the open question in Virginia is how much of that is going to encourage utilities to either look at combined heat and power themselves, or to look at encouraging it on the customer side of the meter.
Well, that sounds extremely encouraging all the way around that Virginia is even considering something like that. So, Dwight, do you want to go ahead and have a discussion about what you wanted to talk about on that topic?
Yeah, sure. So, I think New York has been doing similar initiatives. In the past year and a half regarding grid modernization as well as incentivizing renewables into the New York Independent System Operator system. It's being led by the Public Service Commission. We get involved with siting, permitting, and helping developers with incentives for alternative energy projects, distributed energy, combined heat and power, and energy storage. One of the things that we recently were involved with was, providing kind of a high-level survey of, nationally of initiatives to help streamline combined heat and power permitting. I think the EPA, at least under the Obama administration, had identified the need for easing the permitting process for CHP systems, particularly smaller ones, because there's a lot of technical potential, at least for commercial development in the states, and especially in urban areas where the CHP development would have the potential for relieving urban congestion as far as the local power grid, and also provide needed capacity. In our work, in particular in the New York City area, Con Ed has had several initiatives where they're focusing on distributed generation, including a big part of it is CHP, to offset the planned retirement of one of the nuclear power plants, Indian Point, up about 30 miles or so north of New York City. And one of the things that was recognized that was necessary was providing some streamlining to the CHP permitting process, because as a standalone unit looked upon solely as an electric generating system or as a boiler, it can trigger NOx emissions and air permitting requirements, and the permitting structures in many cases don't account for the dual energy role that CHP systems provide and the much higher efficiency. So some states have been doing permit streamlining, especially with respect to air permitting, in particular permitting by rule, at the state level, mm-hmm. Connecticut and Texas being, I think, out in front with that particular, those particular efforts where smaller systems, less than, generally less than 10 megawatts, can permit with a registration so long as they comply with the requirements and the regulations and just submit a certification that the requirements have been met. New Jersey and Rhode Island also have, as well as Texas, for larger systems, have some general and standard permitting requirements where an application is submitted, but so long as the requirements of the general permit are met, the permittee would receive a permit for the facility. New York has not quite done that yet. I think there is some recognition of accounting for the energy output of the systems in permitting the systems from accounting for things like NOx and carbon monoxide emissions. This referred to as the avoided emissions
program.
Okay, is that what you wanted to say then? Is that good?
Mm-hmm.
This is Kleena. Can I ask a question, CR, or did you have another panel member?
No, absolutely, please. You're the only few main presenters right now, but we have a few other people on board here, but please, Kleena, go ahead.
Okay. Dwight, do you have a sense of why Connecticut and Texas were out front on this with the permit by rule? I mean, who was pushing it, and why was, I guess, the regulators receptive? Why were they receptive?
Well, I think Texas... and I think Texas is really, among the states that we surveyed, I thought Texas was probably the leader in rolling them out. I think for a couple reasons. I think Texas has a philosophy of reducing regulation generally. We'll start with that. And mm-hmm. there are some synergies with respect to, like, the chemical industries in Texas, where there's quite a bit of recognized benefit to CHP in the state, in the chemical industry, and the so that they're I think have a philosophy of trying to streamline those permitting processes where they see benefit in general to the energy system. From CHP, and I think they're also a leader, frankly, in some of the renewable permitting as well with respect to wind energy and such in the state. Connecticut, on the other hand, I think has a particular focus on commercial CHP, and their permit by rule efforts are more for smaller systems, but I think because of their Connecticut being, I would say, a higher utility cost state, they have been, I think, leading the way in trying to incentivize CHP without providing a lot of financial incentives, but making it easier to for the CHP to be deployed.
Mm-hmm.
I think New York is. New York has historically had, it has pushed CHP at the NYSERDA, which is the Energy Research and Development Agency. That has been more of a providing financial incentives to the areas. But I think Connecticut has been taking a different approach in making the permitting more streamlined for the smaller systems.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Connecticut sees... I think the benefits from it and the ability to potentially relieve some of the energy costs for users.
Yeah, I mean, I just find it interesting that because, you know, Virginia is kind of dipping its toe into whether it's going to join RGGI, and, you know, since Connecticut is part of RGGI, I just found it interesting that they were pushing it.
Yeah, well, it's certainly, and I don't think we've seen a lot of utilities developing CHP directly, although Con Ed has been is the exception. They've been actually giving pretty good, quite good incentives for CHP development because I think there's a recognition that distributed energy development within the city is part of their longer-term strategy for meeting addressing the grid deficiencies within the Con Ed region, and also, like I said, the addressing the generating capacity loss from the Indian Point close.
Sure.
So can I ask a related?
Reggie, interesting development. I think that's significant.
Yeah, please introduce yourself first before you speak, but go ahead.
This is Rick Reevesteen from Boston University. And my related question is whether you have anything to say about credits under the REGI program. Haven't they established, or at least they did in Massachusetts, the ability to get credits for doing, like renewable energy credits, for doing CHP? Is that common throughout REGI? Is that something that other states are doing?
This is Dwight. I know that New York is not doing that. New York, I think, is unique in the way it administers its renewable portfolio standard in that NYSERDA auctions off the renewable energy credits for that. On the other hand, NYSERDA does provide incentive funding for the CHP, but they're not using the REGI structure directly as part of the CHP promotion. I'm not sure about the other REGI states, but that's the case in New York where we're from. I think the difference being most of the other states push the renewable portfolio requirement onto the utilities and let the utilities manage their programs. And I think New York has not declared CHP to be a renewable energy per se in their portfolio standard. But they do have an energy efficiency standard where it kind of comes into that.
Any other comments? Kevin?
I have a question. I came in late, and I heard you mention something about 10 megawatts, and I wanted to get an idea of what size range you're talking about. What do you mean by small, and what's been the pattern of the sizes that have been planned or put online?
Well, the 10 megawatts was a threshold for the permit by rule availability in Connecticut. So if you have a system less than 10 megawatt, which is a fairly good size one, especially for commercial application, you can permit by rule in Connecticut with that system. And like I said,
that means comply with the rule, and the permit's pretty much automatic.
Correct. It's like a registration process. So in Connecticut, it works where you have a notification, you enter into an agreement to construct and operate within the parameters that are in the rule, and there's no formal permit application, and there's no public notice requirement.
But this is Rick Reevesteen. Is there enforcement? Is there auditing? Is there checking? Is there reporting? What assurances do we have? A permit by rule system requires something like that.
Yeah, I mean, we're most familiar with New York, but the agency would retain ability to review the operation for compliance. There's compliance reporting. It doesn't waive the operational requirements of the permit. And in fact, that's part of the permit structure. It just streamlines the issuance of the permit in the first place. but it doesn't waive the enforcement ability of the environmental agency. In the rules that are like this that we've reviewed, the requirements that are prescribed in the regulation are intended to ensure that, certain triggering thresholds for things such as NOx, CO, are not exceeded, and that the operating parameters of the system are certain requirements for where they let's call it clean operation is presumed under those requirements. Some of them are rather stringent. I think EPA noted in a survey they did of the permit by rules that some of them, and I think they were referring to New Jersey at the time, didn't have a lot of takers on it because the permit by rule was rather stringent. So the process was easy, but you still had to the actual requirements you had to abide by were still challenging.
Yeah, this is Rick Reason. And sometimes a program like that works well if you have an accompanying assistance effort to tell people about it and help them, expedite filling out the forms. Massachusetts has a program like that, the Office of Technical Assistance. That's exactly the kind of thing they would do. This permit by rule opportunity would occur. They would let people know about it. They would find the target or audience that would likely take advantage of it, and then they would put on events and meetings to show them easily how to go through it.
Oh, that's great.
It's an investment, but you only need a few staff to do that. Now, NYSERDA used to do that kind of thing many, many years ago. They were one of the pioneers of technical assistance for pollution prevention back in the 80s. So I figure NYSERDA knows how to do that sort of thing.
Yeah, now NYSERDA, we actually did some contract work for NYSERDA about 4 or 5 years ago where because we work with a lot of brownfield redevelopers in the downstate region, and they wanted to try and reach out to that population to make them aware of, the benefits of combined heat and power and the incentives that were available. And so, like you said, I think historically NYSERDA had some overt outreach into the technology. I don't think they're doing quite as much of that now, but I think probably it's become a little more commercially understood to be out there, and the incentive programs have been fairly stable, which was not the case, I think, historically. I think you can now look up the NYSERDA programs and understand what incentives you might be eligible for a 2-year time frame or so, which was a challenge, I think, in the past where they had a different program every year or so.
The other thing is the federal industrial assessment programs, which are in every state, or they used to be. I don't know if they're still there. Where you can get somebody to come out to your facility and look at do a review of your energy opportunities, energy saving opportunities, they focused on a lot in our area.
And NYSERDA has a program like that in New York, where they do have a technical contractor, especially around CHP as well as some other, where they'll come out and identify the opportunities that you have. And like you said, especially for industrial operations, but also commercial ones, especially with new build projects.
One last comment. I don't know if you want to move on, but this is Rick Reepstein again. Another great thing to do along with this is to have a state contract for CHP services. So you can bring the purchasing people in and have them establish that contract, and that will make it much easier for any subdivision of the state, cities to buy off of, or any state agency. And then that sets an example and kind of creates a good marketplace for private people to also
benefit from.
Okay. Has Massachusetts done that?
You know, I can't say if Massachusetts has done that. Massachusetts has done the assistance. They do have someone at the Division of Energy Resources as well as the Office of Technical Assistance who have worked, done outreach to promote the use of all these incentives for CHP. They published case studies. But as for that aspect, I'm not sure if there is a contract. But I'm going to recommend that I'm actually meeting with the purchasing people tomorrow on another issue.
That sounds great.
So we have one person here from 720-351-1828. Who is that?
Yeah, it's Ron Larson. I'm on the cell phone.
Hi.
I came in late.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I just didn't recognize the number. So, Gene Okun, you're on here. Do you want to comment on any of this?
No, I think my only comment is Gene with Microgrid Energy in California. I think my only comment regarding what you were discussing on Texas, I think the ERCOT market, maybe there's a lot of projects there. I think even though there's some hurdles, I think there's a lot going on there because they can sell into the wholesale market. And so that's become a real winner for those that are developing CHP. But here in California, we have a lot of air quality regulations, Rule 21. There's it's a tough regulatory environment in California to have successful CHP. Although once you navigate it, I think there is some success here. But definitely a heavily regulated state here in California. That's pretty much all I'd like to add at this time.
So I have a question on this. As far as CHP is concerned, is it something that can be done to an existing facility, or do you have to build it from scratch? Because I'm having a hard time understanding why there would be so many regulations to establish that.
Well, I think in our experience, I mean, it's certainly easier with a new build, but you can retrofit. You can retrofit a system. I think the key is that you have a balance between thermal demand and electric demand within the facility. I think the couple of developers we've worked with who, let's say, did a retrofit, it was associated with where the, you know, they already had a boiler system, and they needed to do some significant work to it or replace it, and at that point, you know, you can justify the investment a little more. The financials work better because you've got the factoring the cost for the upgrade of the boiler system. So you, having the presence of the boiler system, you can kind of imply a thermal demand in the system. The reason for the permitting is that these are essentially small power plants. They generally run on natural gas. If you're into systems that are over a megawatt or two, there are some NOx. There are NOx emissions. There's some carbon monoxide, not as much, but certainly NOx is probably the main concern from an air emission standpoint. So you need to have the right exhaust vent requirements if you're in a non attainment area. As far as air quality, that adds another level of restriction to emission sources. So I think that's the nature of the need for a permitting requirement. Is you essentially have a small power plant that's usually embedded within a commercial area.
Yeah, a couple of things. I'm hearing a lot of background noise. Is that either Dwight or Kleena, one of the two of you?
I'm hearing background noise, so I don't know if it's me. But
okay, Kleena, is that you? Somebody
yeah, no, that? I'm in a fairly deadly quiet office, so I don't think it's me.
Huh, that's interesting, because I don't see anybody else that's not muted, so I don't know why that's happening.
Here, I can mute and see
I can.
Not.
Yeah, I can mute.
went away. I don't know who it was.
Well, okay, I'm unmuted. Did it come back?
Yeah. Yes, it did. A little bit. Not too distracting, but if it's you, don't.
How about I'll mute unless there's a question to me. So.
No, that's okay. So, do we have any other questions on this?
Yes, this is Evan. Evan Hughes. I have a question, I think, for Gene about the California experience when you talked about heavily regulated state and air quality issues and Rule 21. I suspect the issue is the difficulty of meeting NOx standards when you have a relatively small unit. You're stuck trying to meet what is pretty easy for large plants to meet, but not if you're a small one. Is that the issue?
Yes, that's one of the issues. In fact, they've tightened up on those regulations as well out here. But just going through the regulatory framework is a bit challenging. I mean, it's part of the CHP business anyway, so I think that's something that groups are used to doing when they're performing it. But I believe that it's just hurdles. It's just additional hurdles to go through that, you know, we typically don't have when we're doing solar or storage or some microgrids, things like that. Those are a lot less burdensome and time consuming and costly. And I think part of it is, you know, the utilities also want to ensure that you're not infringing on them, you know, in terms of that's why Rule 21 is there. So they don't want a bunch of independent power producers showing up in this market. But I think inevitably the way the grid is changing right now, because right now we're at, we've got a target of 50% renewables on the grid, and just recently I've heard as much as we're shooting for 100 out here. And so we're kind of looking at Hawaii's model, and out in Hawaii they're looking at changing the way the utilities basically do their rate basing. And so that model changes for Hawaii, for them to reach 100%, renewables, you know, that may change out here as well. And so ultimately there's certain customers that have the bright profile that CHP works very well for, and they cannot really do it with necessarily battery and solar. They really need thermal. They really need the thermal component, whether it's for chilling or for heating, in their boilers or otherwise. And so those groups will always, you know, I think do well for CHP, but there's a challenge out here right now, even for any kind of natural gas generator going on, where the Public Utilities Commission is really kind of focused more on the storage component and what that's providing to the grid, especially with solar and wind tied to it, where they have dispatchable power. And so I think many of the folks in the natural gas engine CHP business are kind of looking at this and having some struggles with their future business models, because really it's very difficult to get anything out here in California that burns fossil fuels to be something that you know, the state really wants to take on. You know, they're really looking at how they can shut down all the nuke plants that are left. Those will be done here soon, and they're even not giving permitting for natural gas plants to fire up anymore or do that. They're trying to, you know, eliminate those too. So there's this real push out here to kind of get away from the fossil fuel side of it. But that being said, I think that there's still this niche market here for certain customers with certain profiles that meet that need, and the type of SCR systems that scrub the air and certain types of microturbines that allow for those low NOx and SOx emissions, those still fall under that hurdle, and so there's still the ability to get that done. Caterpillar still has the ability to get that done. So I think that it's just getting harder, and you have to sort of find those like needles in the haystacks, if you will, of opportunities where it really makes sense. And then the AQMD issue, you know, Southern California has some of the toughest air stringent quality issues. And so that regulatory, getting to the NOx, SOx there is possible, but it costs a little more, and the very, you know, just the process itself, the paperwork and the monitoring and the things that go on to get there are not that easy. Not everybody can do those. So I don't know if I answered your question, but
are you talking? You've mentioned natural gas several times. You've never said anything about biogas. I assume everything you've been saying applies to natural gas fueled facilities.
Yeah, I haven't done a lot of biogas. Many years ago there was a lot of push towards biogas out here, and for one reason or another, I think that kind of fell on its face. I think there was some other regulatory issues around some of that. I think there was some technical issues around some of that. I think they've overcome a lot of that, but I'm not familiar, you know, with a tremendous amount of biogas being projects being done out here. That doesn't mean they're not. The space that I'm focused on is really commercial industrial customers, and so I'm really just looking to connect into the natural gas pipelines that they have at their facilities, and the cost of natural gas has come down. So that's some of the good things. But
what size?
I believe there are. Yeah.
What size?
Size-wise? I'm sorry. Yeah. Could you repeat that?
Yeah. Yes, I was wondering the size.
Most everything is somewhere between a half megawatt and 3 megawatts of either engines or turbines. So these are customers that typically they're industrial customers that have a nice load profile 24/7, and you know, really need the thermal energy, and it's kind of a no-brainer with them in terms of the financial returns, because ultimately they're using boilers, and so at the end of the day we're just replacing the boiler consumption with an engine, and that's doing what it needs to do. But even there, there's some challenges with how those transactions move forward. And some customers, you know, if they want to own the system, it's different from solar, because they've got to deal with, the moving parts. They've got to deal with the maintenance. They've got to deal with downtime. They've got to deal with then the regulatory side of the permitting and air quality permitting and those things. And so, that leads, I think, back to, you know, larger vendors that have the ability to wrap the projects financially and be able to just sell power and you know, hot water or chilled water. And so, you know, I think that's sort of where the market is going to end up anyway, at some point, where you have some of the deregulated, some of the utilities, you know, Con Ed Solutions is out here and others are out here in this environment, NextEra, many other utilities are here poking around in the California ISO market with the main utilities and getting involved in developing projects, selling power and microgrids into the, you know, SCE's grid as well. So it's very interesting to see the changes that have come about.
Thank you.
This is Sierra. I have a question. Is there any more of more regulations involved in structuring or constructing a new natural gas energy system or power system without the combined heat and power, or is it more of a problem to have the combined heat and power included?
Well, I can chime in on that. I think if there's no thermal load out here in California, the economics don't work very well. The fact that we're using some of the thermal energy that was already being used to generate heat, and we're using that in a way to make heat and electricity, that's where you get the benefit, and that's why CHP is what it is. It also is reducing the carbon footprint rather than buying power from the grid, which is not as efficient in terms of how they make power, which is what you're talking about. And so ultimately, I think if you're looking at that, that's really more of like a small peaker plant. So I don't know any facilities that have just put an engine in that have not generated used the heat, except for maybe a different technology like a fuel cell, like a Bloom fuel cell, where they're using natural gas to make electricity, but they're not consuming the heat, the thermal side of that. So
you're saying most of the systems are combined heat and power also.
That's the most efficient use of that technology. So and what we're seeing more of is that combined with solar and energy storage, and so they'll put energy storage in between the engines or the turbines and the load, so it'll handle the transient power spike, so the engine's not revving up and down constantly, and then they'll use the solar to cover some of the peaks that the engine's not covering for the base load. So they're getting more technically involved, and getting more technologies involved than just cogen. I think you're seeing a lot of bigger mix into the microgrid market.
Okay. Any other comments here?
Sierra, this is Ron Larson. Can you hear me?
Sure. Go ahead.
I'd like to introduce the question of adding biochar to the combined heat and power. This is already taking place in Stockholm. I wonder if I came on late. Maybe the word came up earlier, and I apologize for that. But I think it's a wonderful use of biomass because they have to be small. You're never going to see a gigawatt of biomass electric. And we need carbon negativity. So I wonder if anybody has a comment on adding the word B to CHP.
Dwight, any comments on that?
Well, I think it's an interesting concept. I actually was at a conference last week with a panel on biochar as a substitute for coal. And I guess, with the right type of handling system and reliable source of supply, it would seem to make sense. I don't know if the technical folks might have an opinion on the emissions of that as compared to, say, a natural gas system, as far as NOx and things like that. But certainly an interesting concept, and it would I think more fully bring in the renewable fuel aspect into the equation. So I haven't heard of it, but that's an interesting concept. So.
Yeah, I'll just mention again the word Stockholm. It's been in place for about a year now, and I think it replaced basically an incinerator for the city of Stockholm.
Ron, what's the source of the biochar?
I think it's municipal waste in part, but it's also things that would go into an incinerator.
Yeah, the presentation I saw, they were doing refuse-derived fuel briquettes that they would then turn into biochar, which it really makes the municipal solid waste, it expands its usefulness.
So you're describing a power-only system that they did not have the heat aspect.
Any other thoughts on this?
This is Evan. I would assume that the Stockholm one probably is CHP, not pure power. Is that right?
Yes, but the important addition is the word B. It's also biochar.
And the other comment was trying to use it instead of coal. I'm sure NOx would be a probably a showstopper if you have to meet the kind of NOx standards that apply to natural gas. It's almost impossible for a solid fuel to do as well at small size because you can't afford all the controls. And even biogas has a hard time meeting NOx standards.
Yeah, I'm not sure why, but I've been told that NOx is generally not a problem when making biochar. The making of the biochar itself occurs under 600, 700 C, and the NOx problem occurs at much higher temperatures. So I don't think that we're going to see a NOx problem with CHPB, with biomass, of course.
Anybody else? Okay. Well, we can go ahead and end the call here. We're going to have another call on Thursday. And Catherine Johnson is an expert on working with utilities. She does a lot of research and evaluation of utility energy efficiency programs all over the country and state energy efficiency programs. So she's going to be discussing some of the best ones that are out there and the most effective ones on a Thursday call. So I hope you all can join that. And
You said that there was a change in time on that Thursday call, and I didn't pick that up.
Yes, Catherine thought she could make it earlier, but she isn't going to be able to be on it until 4 o'clock Eastern time, so it's now 4 o'clock Eastern time that she'll be there. And I'll send an announcement out tomorrow about the call on Thursday so everybody knows what the time is. But, yeah, we had to change the time on that. So I'm figuring out how to send these announcements out when we have a couple calls close together without making it totally confusing for everybody. So I'm working on that. So anyhow, I hope you can all make it. I think this was an excellent conversation on a topic that was very important but not discussed too much. And thanks so much, Dwight and Kleena, for being on the panel, and thanks to everybody else for attending. And hopefully see you all on Thursday.
Thank you.
Thank you.